So I was originally asked to preach about a month ago, and my spot was really unfairly taken by Trey. I just feel like I should air that grievance. Not an apology. So I had been kind of looking at the text from whatever the lectionary was that week, and they asked if I'd like to reschedule, and I said, "Ooh, preach during Lent. I love preaching about Jesus. I mean, it's all about Jesus in some way or another, but to actually preach about the things that he did, oh man, that's exciting. I love that." So imagine my dismay when I see that the reading is about Peter. On the surface, this whole lectionary is about one of Peter's biggest goof-ups, and he had many, as we can attest. Did I just get the chance to preach not on the greatest story ever told, but instead have to spend time delivering a cautionary tale about not being ashamed of the gospel? This manipulative narrative, call it out, that the less fortunate of us have that we've had foisted upon us by youth pastors and television preachers, depending on guilt-ridden emotional gotchas. Are you like Peter? Will you let your Lord and Savior down when someone asks you? But that's not what's happening here. The passage where the main character of God's masterpiece of love is reduced to an aside. Meanwhile, back at the trial, Jesus is still acting with poise and wisdom and schooling those religious chumps who thought they could pull one. Now, back to our regularly scheduled blowing his big shot. And this isn't to pick on Peter. I've heard a lot of stories or talks or whatever, just allusions to Peter. The bad guy, this story. Even in this moment, which I imagine, if I were Peter, would be my most regrettable moment. The time that I would look back on my life and go, all the things add up to squat compared to that moment. We have ample evidence of his mistakes and faults throughout the four Gospels. And I wonder if Peter in heaven is sitting there going, man, I wish I had written a gospel of my own to tell the story from my perspective, all these other guys taking shots at me. He's foolhardy, impulsive, seems to act before he thinks, but he's also the boldest. He steps out of the boat. He asks questions when the others are afraid to look foolish. He's the foundation, the cornerstone. Like Thomas, who votes to go to Jerusalem so that we may die with Jesus, Peter leads with passion. He jumps to defend Jesus in the garden. He refuses to let Jesus lower himself by foot washing. And then when Jesus turns it on him and says, you have no part with me, he says, well, give me the deluxe package. I want it all. Peter is all in. Wash my hands and my head too. When the Savior of the world nicknames you Rocky because of how solid you are, it's a good thing. The very fact that Peter is at the fire outside of Jesus' trial, when, by the way, most of the other disciples are in hiding, unsure of what is coming next, points to his character, to who he is, that he would do everything he could to be there for his friend. So why does John spend time on this moment? Why do we all know about three times denying, and the rooster crowing? Why do we spend time on the moment when the strong falter and the bolder are exposed? We're leaning on dissonance this Lenten season, and there is definitely dissonance in Peter. He's not the rock he will become. He can't even live up to his own expectations. There's also dissonance between Jesus and Peter. When the student is panicking and blowing it, losing his nerve under the trial of his peers, Jesus is standing resolute, speaking truth to power that hold his life in his hands. Jesus knows that his deeds speak for themselves. He calls the witnesses of his own integrity and consistency. I've spoken openly to the world. I've said nothing in secret. Basically, I said what I said. You know what I said. Everyone knows, and I stand by it. No more, nothing more to say. Jesus is not hiding. He's not backing down from his message. Even in this exchange, when it earns him a blow to the face for his emphatic refusal to be silenced through intimidation. Peter, on the other hand, is backpedaling. All of a sudden, the man who is willing to die fighting for Jesus, hours later, is overcome with fear of the consequences of his situation. I told you, I don't know the man. Peter falls short of who he wants to be, who he strives to be. The man whom the Son of Man says he is. He's an imposter. He stumbles. And ultimately, he fails his friend, his teacher, his God, and his Messiah. But this story isn't about Peter. It's about us. We all, like Peter, have moments when our bravery, our integrity, our boldness, our loyalty, you name it, when we lose sight of it. We all bear the marks of our loving Creator when we use the gifts he gave us all. The truth is, though, is we all, like Peter, have that place where these gifts fail us and we retreat to our human sensibilities, guilt, pride, selfishness, greed, judgment, self-preservation. We, especially here at Raleigh Mennonite, are wonderful, loving people. We bear the marks of our Creator. We all have deeds, however, that we look back on with shame. Things that we hope we'll never have to answer for or even admit out loud. There are things we think but wouldn't say. There are things we say things in private but not in public. There are things we'd say in an email but not to someone's face. Personally, I'm at my least Christ-like behind the wheel of a car. that's fair. I'm used to better drivers. Just the very idea of having the attitude of Christ while trailing a car going under the speed limit while I'm late is ridiculous. How would Jesus react when another driver puts everyone at the intersection in danger by turning without looking or signaling? Go ahead, my son. Cause a 7-car pileup. We try to hold ourselves to the standard we demand from others. It's a good thing. We're passionate about doing the right thing. Many people in this church put their money where their mouths are. Awkward. you get the point. We're okay with the idea that the right... we're passionate about doing the right things, but are we okay with the idea that the right choices might make us uncomfortable? Are we ready to do the hard work to fix our faults as we're ready to admit them? We're ready to speak out when those in power are asking for silence. But are we willing to remain silent when we have every right to speak, but only to serve our own purpose. We're willing to suffer for the sake of others, but what about giving up control? Are we willing to, like Jesus, lean into our best selves and give control to our accusers? But remember, this isn't a guilt trip. Don't fall into the trap of your accusers and lose yourself. Don't be fooled into thinking you're better than Peter or your neighbor. Don't be consumed by the shame of your imperfection. Lean in to the beauty and the horror of the cross. Lean into the dissonance of our limitations and failures and the grace and truth of the one we follow, of the one who loves us, and of the one who is all he said he is.